Hey, this is Glenn Mack. Now you're listening to Wildfire Radio on wildfireradio.com.
Wildfire Radio, we're back. Welcome to Fourth and Go. We're ripping up the airwaves tonight for the next hour talking sports. I got my crew here sitting next to me. First, let me introduce Harold Johnson. Ready to drop the gloves tonight, man?
Roll, go, ready to go.
And we got Mark Drums, Drumheller.
Yo, the gloves are off tonight. There was a clinic in Sunrise, Florida over the weekend, and my man Ron Hextall was pulling the jersey over the NHL and delivering some ferocious uppercuts that we all love.
Because nobody saw it coming, right?
That's
blind opposition.
Right.
Throw boom, the hooks. Boom. Boom. Body shots. But before we talk about our show tonight, we have a huge show lined up for you. I want to give a shout-out to Mike Gilgan, our fourth guy here tonight. Wasn't able to make it. Shout-out to Mike Gilgan Sr., too. Get well soon,
absolutely.
Man.
Absolutely.
So yeah, this one's for you tonight. All right, buddy. Fourth and Go. Dedicated Mike. All right. So, like I said earlier, huge show, right?
Big one tonight.
First off, we got Sam Carcitti of the Philadelphia Inquirer, Flyers beat writer. This has got to be one of the busiest days of the year for him. So, I'm real excited we're able to pull him away for a few minutes and see what's going on.
Yeah, with NHL free agency, definitely.
And it's been crazy already. Yeah. And then, later on in the show, we have a special guest from NJ.com, Trenton Times, Mark Eckel, who's a great Philadelphia Eagles insider. You think about it, it's a rare time of the year where all four sports teams have something pretty paramount on the table right now. You could talk about them at any point, and you look at it and you say, the Eagles could actually be probably the least important.
On the back burner right now.
For once.
Right, because they're just working up to their season. It's still a month away, training camp. So, yeah, they're never in the back of your mind as a Philadelphia sports fan, but they're on the horizon still.
Yeah, and then all you got to do is turn on the TV and watch the Phillies playing, you're like, wait. The Eagles are never last. Yeah. But we got that itch. So we wanted to bring on Mark, talk a little bit about some of the moves that happened this week with the Eagles, because there are still some things in the deck that they're shuffling, and I think we'll get really good insight
and
from
Mark. And a surprising move that we're going to talk about later.
One that, I'm using the quotes, culture. One that affects culture.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
we can't wait to talk about that. But let's talk a little bit about last week's show. We had Philadelphia Inquirer beat writer Keith Pompey on last week, and we did a really good segment with him, kind of previewing the draft and where we thought things would go, and man, did they not go that way.
Dave, I can't lie. I was sitting in my favorite local watering hole waiting for the LA Lakers pick, and I just knew with their franchise history that they were going to take Jahlil Okafor, and I was shocked when they took my guy. I was a little bit heartbroken. I can't lie.
For once, I think I built up that Philly thick skin, you know, type of woe is me, pessimistic, because I'm an optimist by nature. But I wrote on Twitter before the draft, I said, I just feel the disappointment brewing. And I had it in my mind that Russell was going to LA, and it did. So I wasn't hurt as bad, but unfortunately, I'm not going to lie, that's the guy I still wanted.
But go ahead, Mark.
Tough. I think, you know, the city in general was just so keyed in on the guard. So when they didn't get Russell and then they decided not to take Moutier and weren't even able to trade up to get Moutier later in the first round, I think a lot of people got frustrated.
Well, and I'll tell you what, I don't think they should have taken Moutier after they saw what dropped to them.
Mm-hmm. But absolutely.
Exactly. Now, you just hit on the good point. I was soaking in my tears for about 12 hours until I woke up in the morning and I was like, this is exactly the Sam Hinkie thing to do. You think back to the previous two drafts, he took the best player available. Noel was hurt. Embiid was hurt. They were the best player. Now he's taking the best player available who is healthy, ready to plug into summer league, and you can't pass on him there.
You really can't, and the factor is Hinkie came on afterwards the next day and said Joel Embiid's injury really did play some type of role in that draft.
It had to.
And if you look at the way this is constructed, Noel kind of fits with either of them, right? So it's really going to end up being an Embiid or Okafor type deal, in my opinion, long term.
Right. And short term, that's a great point, long term. And short term, they still have, you know, 96 minutes to split between three guys and kind of work Embiid back into the lineup without trying to push his injury too far along. So they could take that route, which it looks like, at least they're saying right now, that's exactly what they're going to do.
Exactly. And that's key here is to be able to give Embiid time to heal properly and to come back at full strength. And then, you know, if you have too many assets down low, you know, you can always deal them. But the key thing people want to think of is that those assets, their value is only going to increase. Like Okafor is only going to be worth more next year and on because of, you know, the talk before the draft with him slipping and things of that nature. So I think it all worked out.
And that's the thing, Mark. If Joel comes back and he's fairly healthy, but Jahlil Okafor plays well, you could possibly get a value at the trade deadline in season, this season. So they have
a
lot of avenues they can go down. And I actually commend Hinkie after my woe is me, my very reactionary disappointment for not getting D'Angelo Russell. Immediately after, I was like, he took the best talent available, who 2 months before was the consensus number one
Absolutely.
Pick. You get the number one pick at number three. Come on.
You know what I like? His attitude. He looks like he's got one.
Oh, he's ready.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of people were mad if you saw the introductory press conference that he didn't look too thrilled. He kind of hardly placed the jersey back down on the table.
That's okay.
But then he was in the community this week down walking in around. Center City, Philly, walking around with a Dr. J jersey on, you know, kissing babies, shaking hands.
But
so
I also
he's
think
out
he's
there.
All about business. He just looks like he's a winner.
Yeah,
that's what I like about him.
We're
already.
All about business, my man.
Yeah, we are. But didn't someone else have kind of a surprise reaction last year when they got drafted number three?
Oh, yeah.
Remember the
Joel Embiid when they caught him on camera? Yeah. I think he was sleeping.
That was the
bit.
Funniest face.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't read too much into what you saw on draft night.
We all play armchair psychologists when we see stuff like that.
I mean, he didn't get worked out by the Sixers, so he really thought he was going one or two. He was sure of it.
Now, mm-hmm. I know you did the Philly thing. You know, used to disappointment. Did you really, in your heart of hearts, think the Lakers had it? I thought there was a slight chance take Russell.
I thought, especially once you heard that Kevin Love opted out, which we heard the day before, that LaMarcus Aldridge opted out, and then they were still trying to trade for DeMarcus Cousins. I thought that they thought in a perfect world they could land Russell and a big guy. Now
they were wrong.
Well, yep. LaMarcus Aldridge is out right before we came in. I read on Deadspin.com that their meeting with LaMarcus Aldridge, the LA Lakers, did not go very well.
He was not impressed.
But the Spurs did, right?
Yeah, well who wouldn't be impressed by the Spurs? Best organization in basketball.
Now, one last point on the draft. We're pumping this up. We're giving Hinkie some praise with his first pick. But Mark kind of highlighted on it earlier. I did have some disappointment with the way the rest of the draft went. Looking forward, you had a lot of assets next year. You already have some picks from the Lakers. You have some picks from the OKC and the Heat, and you have your own. And they actually have Orlando's first-round pick, too, coming up in, I think, 17 from the Saric trade. They have assets, and then they have 5 second-round picks. I would have loved to see them move a little bit up. I didn't have to go all the way to Moutier, but I'm looking somewhere at pick 20. That there were some definite guards there that I was attracted to.
Dave, you brought up an astute point, and you have to think Hinkie on draft night did not get the offer he wanted, but he's not going to be able to take all these young first-round picks on. So there is going to be a move made at some point, whether it's sooner or later. Something has to
You only have 15 guys on the roster.
Exactly.
Optionality, that's what Hinkie's about, right?
Yeah, and that's a good approach. So along with the Sixers, they had their draft Thursday night last week. The other big team in town that has their annual draft during the summertime, Philadelphia Flyers, and they did some work this weekend, and that leads us to what we're about to talk about with our upcoming guest. But before we get to him, and that's Sam Carcitti, just want to highlight what we saw, what our thoughts were before we bring in Sam. And my first initial reaction to the draft was A+.
Absolutely. I mean, big win for, you know, Provorov to fall to them at 7. A lot of people thought the Devils would take him at 6. They were kind of nervous, and things just fell, you know, our way for once at the draft.
All reports out there, all the experts give the pick an A+. They said the Flyers never in their wildest dreams thought he would drop to 7, and you, especially with their goalie situation, and we'll get into that later when we have Sam on, to get him at 7 is a bolster for the franchise.
And I was even more excited about pick 24 when they traded up from pick 29, which they got from the Tampa Bay Lightning in the trade at the trade deadline, when they were able to ship off defenseman Braden Coburn at the time. I almost had a loss because I remember Matt Carl went there earlier. So when they shipped off Coburn, got the 29th pick, traded out to move down to 24, that Travis Konechny was ranked number 12 in some people's pre-drafts. He looked like a guy built for Philly. He's got
a lot
attitude,
of people.
He's a grinder, And he's one of those guys that I think is going to fit in perfectly.
He's kind of a small right winger, and he has that chip on his shoulder, like you said, willing to come in and try to prove a point.
Yeah.
A lot of people had him top 15. And, you know, one of the main things that, you know, you don't hear a lot of is that he does have great leadership qualities. And I think that's something that Hextall is looking at when he's drafting these people.
Well, there's always, and I don't question it as much as others, but there's always been a question about who wears the C with the Flyers. Is Drew that big of a leader, or does he have the leadership quality you're looking for? Already people are saying Konechny for captain. I mean, that's amazing for for a kid that young to be projected as a future captain. It's just something that I think we're going to have to keep an eye on. So with that transition in mind, we want to go to our guest of the night from Philadelphia Inquirer, philly.com, your Flyers beat writer. We have Sam Carcitti on the line. Sam, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, man, I know today is one of the busiest days of the year for you, so we really appreciate you taking some time out. But like I mentioned in our discussion, we're big puck heads here, and we really wanted to get you on tonight to kind of get the reaction. So first off, any breaking news, any rumors you have swirling around the Flyers and what they might do with the remaining roughly $4 million on the cap?
Yeah, you know what? I think they're going to be relatively quiet. They may make a minor move, but you know, I think their main goal right now is to re-sign Michael Delzato. They have about $4.5 million to spend, which is kind of close because Delzato, who knows what he'll get. They would like to probably sign to a multi-year deal rather than a one-year deal, and they made the qualifying offer at $1.3 million, but he obviously will get more than that. If he wants to go long-term, he'll probably get, I would think, $3 million at least in that area. And but they would like to, you know, do a 2 or 3 year deal if they could. And that would not leave them much cap room. And, you know, Ron Hextall was really pushed up against it because of some moves made by Paul Holmgren. And he has freed some cap space, but really it's going to take probably another year before he's having cap problems, and as a result, he wasn't able to really go after a Matt Beleski or a Foley, Michael Foley, or somebody of that ilk who really could help the team, there's no question. So, you know, he slipped down a little bit and got a player probably a step below that in Sam Gagne, but I think it's a pretty good move to get Gagne because he's going to be a motivated guy, and he's young, and he's got a chance still to develop. I know he's been in the league for a while, but sometimes guys take several years before they develop. He's 25, and you know, he's on a one-year contract, and he knows he's playing for a contract, so that's a good thing.
Well, that's interesting you bring up Sam Gagne, because I read today that they look like they might try and transition him to winger, and what he's done previously, he's played on some really bad teams, Sam, and with Edmonton, and even this year with Arizona, he did lead all forwards in scoring on his team with, what was it, 15 goals and 41 total points, so I think there is some talent in there. Like you said, he's 25 years old, but do you see him being able to play the winger, and I guess that would move Shen to center?
Yeah, he did play a lot of wing this year. He also played center. I actually asked Ron Hextall tonight, and I said, where do you see him playing? And he said, probably at right wing. It surprised me a little bit because, I thought the third line last year, the line that ended the season, I thought that was a really effective line. And that was Sean Couturier centering Matt Reed and on the left and the right side at Braden Shen. I actually thought Braden Shen played better at right wing than he did center. So, you know, and it still may end up being that way. We should say it's only June, and it'll all be decided at camp. But as of now, Hextall says he sees Sam Gagne more as a right wing, and that would seem to indicate, like you said, that Braden Shen will go to the second line center, and I guess the plug in Gagne is a third line right winger. So, and who's going to be a second line left winger? That's still open to debate. But you know, R.J. Umberger, is he a guy you put there? Is Matt Reed a guy you put there? You put Umberger back to the third line. So, you know, I just thought the third line, like I said before, with Shen, Couturier, and Reed, that's a really good third line. If you start saying that's like your second line, it's okay. It's not bad. It's not great, though. But I really think it's a real good third line. It's just a shame they didn't have more cap room because they really could use a dynamic left winger, you know, to go with Wayne Simmons, and to me, I would like to see Gagne as a second line center. I think he may bring a little more offense than Sean
I'm with you on that point. I would really like to see them keep that third line together. It seemed to build some momentum at the end of last year. But honestly, with the new coach in town, Dave Haxtell, we're not sure how he's going to try and play yet. So I guess you're right. It's a little early in the process. But as you talked about free agency, I want to just transition to that one more time. And knowing that once they try and sign Delzato, or I think they'll get the deal done at some point, there's still that big elephant in the room, and that's Vinny LeCavalier. And I know they're trying to move him, and I know there's a few teams out there that are under the cap floor. You mentioned earlier there are about five teams, I think, is New Jersey, Florida, Anaheim, Nashville, and Arizona. Do you see any possibility that one of those teams will try and absorb that contract?
The only way I see them doing it is if the Flyers not only trade them LeCavalier, the Flyers also get in the draft pick. Now, whether it's a third round or whatever, it's going to have to be the Flyers, I think, would have to give something to get Vinny off the books. And you know, the Flyers do a lot of picks next year. You know, these 5,000 draft picks, whether they would give a second pick, the second pick they got in Chicago in the Kimo Kingman trade. You know, they picked up a couple other picks, a third rounder and possibly a fourth rounder. In the Gagne trade, to either a third or a fourth, it's a conditional pick. So, you know, they do have some flexibility, but I think that's what it would take. It'd have to be, you know, the perfect situation. I talked to Vinny LeCavalier's agent today, and he said, Vinny, you know, is content to stay with the Flyers if he can play. He wants more playing time, Vinny. There's no question about it. He thought he was mishandled, and I would agree. I don't think he really got a fair shot last year. He played on the fourth line most of the year as a right wing. Who knows? Maybe Vinny becomes your second line center. I think that's a long shot, but you never know. I mean, Vinny's still effective on the power play.
Yeah, he's physical down low. Yeah.
Hey, Sam.
And maybe, you know, maybe you put him on the second line for a while and see if he has anything left. You put him with some proven scorers on that line, whether it's Reed and Simmons or whoever. And, you know, maybe he does have something left. In fact, he is only 35. But he's certainly not going to be the scorer on the fourth line. So, you know, that's an interesting decision. But, you know, right now, I'd say the odds of another team picking up today are not good. I think maybe you might have like a 20-25% chance. But never say never. And you know, who knows? I mean, the Flyers were able to trade Chris Pronger's contract. So, like I said, never say never.
That's true. We'll hope for the best. Sam, it's Mark Drumheller here. Provorov is arguably one of the best defensemen in the draft, and Konechny actually got a lot of hype as a top 15 prospect coming in. When can we expect these guys to contribute?
I think Provorov is, my guess is that he plays right away. I think the Flyers want to change their identity, and how do you do that? I think you bring up some of these young kids. You want to build with them. Other teams do it, and I think it's time for at least one of these guys, one of these prospects, whether it's Sanheim or whether it's Sam Warren or whether it's Provorov. I think Provorov, from the scout I talked to, is probably a little more advanced than them, and he's only an 18-year-old kid, but he, you know, this kid has a lot going for him. He's a two-way player. He's fast. He can play physical, and a lot of scouts I've talked to think he's ready now. I would like to see them start the season with the Flyers, and the Flyers are cautious about that, and I can understand their point, but they also, you know, have a caveat. They leave the caveat hanging out there, and they say that, you know, it will be decided in camp, and that, to me, says, if you read between the lines, if this kid's impressive in camp, he's going to stay, so they'll get a chance. As far as connecting, I think he's going to be at least 1 year away, you know, maybe two, or maybe a year and a half, who knows, but you know, he's a promising kid. As you know, they traded up to get him in the first round. They got him at 24. He's fast and pretty, and he's a lot more mature, you know, than most players that are 18 years old, both physically and with his hockey IQ. So he could be there as early as 2016-17, and he will give the Flyers, you know, a piece that they need.
Yeah, I heard a lot of people were impressed with his leadership qualities. In talking with the young defensemen, you know, we built a pretty good core with Gostivere and Sanheim, Hag, those guys. Do any of them, besides obviously Provorov, do you expect any of them to make the roster and actually play this year?
I don't. I think they're loaded on defense. We even have Brandon Manning, who probably will be sent back to the Phantoms just because they have an overloaded defenseman. I do look for Haxtell to try to free more cap space and maybe. You know, I think he's trying to trade a Luke Shen. He would like to trade.
Sam. This is Harold Johnson III. Kind of to piggyback off of Mark's question, the most important part of the defense, obviously, is the goaltending situation. I actually want to take it back a little bit first. Anybody who will hear me out talking about the Flyers will always hear me say that I feel like the Flyers were cursed going into the new century by signing John Van Breesbroek in 1998. Over not signing Curtis Joseph, and I feel like there's kind of been a curse on the franchise since then. Now, with what are your thoughts on Steve Mason, and then today the Flyers bringing in Michael Neuwirth as his backup?
Well, as far as the backup this year, Michael Neuwirth, I think, will do a great job. I mean, you know, he's a guy who has been a full-time starter in the league. I mean, he was in Buffalo last year, actually played really well with Buffalo. He had a horrible team in front of him. He had save percentage about 918, 920 in there. He probably played better with Buffalo than he did the Islanders. He came up, he was traded to the Islanders late in the year and did okay, just okay. But he was really good with Buffalo. He had a real quality season early in his career with Washington. He's been inconsistent, though, in his career. But at least he's a guy who is young enough and quick enough. Nothing against Roy Emery. He was a good soldier here, but Ray Emery just lost his side-to-side quickness. Neuwirth gives him that athleticism that Emery did not have. And again, Emery went through a lot. He had major hip surgery and give him a lot of credit for coming back, but he just kind of ran out of gas. And Neuwirth is an upgrade as far as a backup. And let's face it, you know, Mason's a question mark. He only played 51 games last year. He had an assortment of injuries. So you want to have a guy that's ready to step in, and I think they thought that, I know they thought that nobody in the minors was ready to step in. Rob Zepp's free agent, and they don't think he's ready to handle the load. He just does not have the experience in the NHL, and Anthony Stolarz kind of regressed in the second half of last year. So they still have another goalie to get. They're going to sign another goalie probably in the next few days. But Neuwirth will be the backup, and I think they're in good hands. And as you know, they drafted three goalies during the NHL draft the previous week,
Tomek and Sandstrom in the third round.
And Tomek have some good potential. So I think Hextall is building for the future there. So Mason is their guy, but you want to have some guys in the system, and they did not have that, but now they do. And so moving forward, I think they're in much better shape than they were before last weekend.
Yeah, that's great insight. And so that leads us to our last question here. And looking what Hextall has done, already you can see some Flyers fans out there thinking he's walked on water. And he's definitely taken this roster and started to reshape it. And like you said, pretty much start to make a big run at free agents or to the full reshaping next summer. But with that in mind, they weren't that far off from the playoffs. I know that sounds crazy, but if you could just win some overtime games or shootouts or even beat the bad teams, they could have snuck in. Where do you see this roster now? Where do you see the potential going forward? Do you see them being able to make that step and get back at least onto the doorstep of the playoffs, if not get back into it?
I don't see them as a playoff team. I think Columbus is going to be really improved. Columbus was really good, part by injuries, made some really good moves so far in the offseason. So that's going to make it even tougher. I don't see them as a playoff team. I think they'll contend for a playoff spot. I think they'll be in that battle for number eight. They'll probably finish maybe 9-10 in that area. But the nice thing is if they can free some cap space and just hang around, if they free some cap space, then maybe you can add a piece during the season. Who knows? But the nice thing going forward is you're going to be younger and you got some better prospects moving forward. So I think they're moving in the right direction. But, we have to also say that, right now, this is a big summer because they want to re-sign Jay Voracek. That's going to be a big number. And, so that's going to hurt their cap for next year. They'll probably get in the area of $7 million, I would think. He's the guy that would like to lock up long term. So that's going to hurt them for next year. So and Ron Hextall, he has his eye on the cap. He knows what the future holds, and he knows that Voracek is a major part of this team. When you look at Taves. I mean, they mean as much to the Flyers as Kane and Taves do to Chicago. I'm not saying they're as good as those guys, but, you know, they're in the same ballpark.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, so it's really important that they get it done. And you know, and I think Voracek's camp wants to get it done, too. So, you know, that's another piece of the puzzle. So, you know, moving forward, it's really hard to predict because you don't know if they're going to be able to lock up Voracek or if it's going to drag out. And you know, they get it done next year or try to get it done. So, you know, that to me is a major factor, and hopefully they can work it out in the next couple months.
Well, the collective bargaining has changed since the Mike Richards days of the Albatross contracts. What's the max years they could sign Voracek to at this point? It's up to six, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And let's face it, they would like to lock him up for as long as they can. And, you know, Jake, to me, I don't think he'll demand or command as much money, you know, the $8 million plus that Giroux got, that you can argue that, hey, it's a couple years later, so the market is higher. But to me, Giroux does more things than Jake. Jake's a great, great player, but Giroux is an all-around player who plays, you know, PK or can play in the PK. He didn't play as much in PK last year, but he's a very effective penalty killer. He takes face-offs. He's a physical player. He does it all.
Oh, yeah, he's still the face of the franchise. Absolutely.
Yeah, so I think Jake is going to come in a little, you know, less than him, but not a lot less.
Yeah.
So he will be an expensive player, and you know, he was the first team NHL, you know, right wing. It's the first time in a couple decades the Flyers have had a first-team All-Star. So, you know, Jake Voracek, you know, had a career here at just the right time.
Well, he earned it. Well, Sam, I really want to say thank you for coming on tonight. You dropped a lot of insight, some knowledge for us, especially some tips on or your thoughts on Provorov there and the potential of making the team as an 18-year-old. That's great information. We really, really appreciate having you and love to have you on again.
I appreciate the time. I appreciate the time. Anytime, guys. Have a great night.
Are you too, Sam?
Thanks, Sam.
Thanks again. Sam. All right, we're going to have a lot of reactions from that call, as Sam really gave us some good information, some good insight. I mean, I like the honest, because he sat there and said they're not ready for the playoffs necessarily yet, and I think he's right. You know, they might get there, they might slide their way in.
I'd rather Hextall build it slow and steady.
Absolutely,
you know, build the right foundation, do things the right way, don't get greedy.
It seems like we have a few of those processes already in place in Philly right now.
Absolutely.
So
you want
I think
a long term solution, definitely.
So while we, you know, take a little bit of that in, we're going to take a break for our sponsors real fast, and then we'll be back on right after this.
If you want to look your best this summer, I got the place for you. Our friends at Dennis James Hair Salon, 108 East Kings Highway, Haddonfield, New Jersey. They're a full-service salon that really has a passion for modern hair cutting for both men and women. Don't take my word alone. Check out their Facebook page and website at DennisJamesSalon.com. Mention Wildfire Radio when you visit and receive 25% off retail hair products from Red Kid and Paul Mitchell. Take advantage and make your appointment today by calling 856-795-8088. It's only summer once. Call now and experience the passion. Dennis James Hair Salon. Entrepreneurs, listen up. Do you know the value of your business? Are you looking to buy or sell a business? John Sullivan, the founder of Sullivan Strategic, has over 15 years' experience as a CPA, a finalist in Smart CEO's 2015 CPA ESQ Awards. If your small business needs tax and accounting advisory help, you want to call the CPAs at Sullivan Strategic. Focused on entrepreneurs, experts at business evaluation, based in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, serving clients in Jersey and PA. Call 856-324-8291. That's 856-324-TAX1, or go to SolvinStrategic.com. Let me tell you about a company who have changed the game and client experience for buying a car. Auto Lenders and Voorhees delivers a pressure-free car buying experience with a huge selection of one-owner, low-mileage cars at amazing prices with the best interest rates. Vehicles go through a 110-point inspection, certified with a 6-month, 6,000 bumper-to-bumper warranty. Customer satisfaction is the number one priority. Call now and see for yourself. There's no reason to buy anywhere else. 856-768-0053. Auto Lenders, Route 73, Voorhees, New Jersey.
We're back at it. Fourth and Go here on Wildfire Radio. Check us out on wildfireradio.com, fourthandgoradio.com, and also check us on Twitter with the Fourth and Go account. Reach out to us. You can check our email on the website or just hit us up on Twitter. Let us know what you're thinking. Give us some questions, some thoughts. We always react. We're always there to answer.
We'll take care of you no matter what.
So we have another, I mean, like I said earlier, Sam's insight was fantastic, but we have another great guest coming up in the next 3-4 minutes here with Mark Eckel from the Trenton Times and NJ.com talking Eagles with us. So while we transition into his call, the Eagles, as we mentioned earlier, you could say from the outside look like they may be on the back seat compared to some of the other teams, but we don't ever treat the Eagles as a team on the
back seat.
That'll
change quick in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
They'll kick it right in the high gear.
Especially with, you know, training camp coming up. But there are a few things that, you know, in Eagles land that are going on right now that have caught the visibility and have been able to create reaction through the fan base. And the first one is just coming out with DeSean Jackson trying to sit here and say when he got released, the Eagles created a smear campaign. And one of our I want to get your guys' take on this here because, as you know, the Eagles did not necessarily pump anything about DeSean Jackson. They quietly said, we're moving on. It was the NJ.com article, and that's why I want to transition here because, obviously, Mark is from NJ.com.
A lot of people just think it's a very big coincidence that that article came out about an hour or two before he was released and think maybe the Eagles had something to do with floating some information out there. So, also, DeSean has a new TV show that debuted on BET the other night. So, you know, he's always trying. He's trying to
drum his name up and get some publicity for the show.
Definitely.
Yeah. So I think we're at this point now where we've just created separation with that. Mm-hmm. DeSean Jackson is a Washington Redskin. It's over, buddy. Let's just stop reaching back. I mean, I know you're going to get your 5 or 6 wins down there. You know, go have fun, but it's over up here. It's time to move on.
Well, you made a good point, but that's why it will never be completely over as long as he's in the division. And something will always bubble up a little bit. So that's why it has a little more sauce on it. But I think he's just trying to get publicity for his show, really.
I'll tell you what, a Super Bowl would make it over, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Chip wins a Super Bowl, all of a sudden you won't hear anything from DeSean. I guarantee you that. You know, the main thing is, and I like L.A. Shore Parks. I think, you know, the timing was, you know, I don't want to say coincidental because questionable, but it could work the other way. It could have been, you know, like they went to the Eagles, they asked for comment, and the Eagles were like, this is the last straw. This thing's coming
Definitely.
Out. We're going to cut ties now.
Definitely.
Well, there's some talk about did Elliot Shore Parks actually have some inside information from the Eagles, and he purposely put that article out.
Positioned it that way, yeah.
To allow the Eagles to make the move that they wanted to make. It's an interesting, I don't want to call it a conspiracy theory at this time, but it was something that was not purely coincidental, in my opinion. But it was good information, and I trust the heck out of them. I don't think...
The bigger conspiracy theory to me was why DeSean didn't show up against the Saints in the playoffs.
But and talking about showing up, he didn't show up to OTAs this year either. He was out hanging out with LeBron on the courtside seat. So it's same old DeSean. He's trying to stir stuff up, like you said. And at this point, you know, I just get that feeling he's just trying to be in the news to be in the news.
He just didn't fit the culture, and that, you know, that's pretty much what it comes down to. He didn't fit Chip's culture. You know, it got to a point, and, you know, Chip moves on. He moves on quick, so that's, you know, typically how it works.
Well, if anything, Chip's proven is you speak out against him, and you're definitely on the chopping block. And DeSean's a kind of a self-promoter, so it is what you get with him.
Yeah, you have to believe in the program, and I think a lot of people talk about, you know, Chip doesn't give second chances and think, you know, you hear a lot of different things, but I don't know if that's particularly accurate because
it's
he
not.
Seems to give second chances to people who buy into the program and buy into the culture. When you look at Josh Huff, when you look at Riley Cooper,
I go back to his college days with LeGarrette Blount. I keep bringing that up. One of his first games he coached, LeGarrette Blount, sneaks a guy with a sucker shot.
Oh, that was a sneak. He got right in his face and boom.
Suspended him.
Yeah.
But later that year, brought him back on.
Then you kind of underscore my point. He gives second chances to guys who kind of kowtow to what he wants them to do. And I can understand, as a head coach, you have to instill what you want your team and your vision of the team to be. However, that can't completely stifle individuality. There has to be a marriage of the two, to me.
And look who we just have show up.
With the cat dragged in.
G Street. In the house.
What's going on, fellas?
How you feeling? So we're talking a little Eagles here, getting ready for our guest, Mark Eckel, coming up here. And we were talking about the DeSean Jackson news today that he's still bitter.
Well, and did you guys hear DSJ is going to have his own reality show, too.
Yeah, we were just talking about that. It actually debuted a couple of days ago on BET. Yeah.
Check it out.
Yeah. I didn't actually see it. I fell asleep on it, so obviously it wasn't too interesting to me.
Did he go over the middle on the show? Or?
Yeah, he did run some slant routes in practice, so that's against the air, though.
All sideline stuff and deep stuff, huh?
But while we're talking culture here, I think it's interesting for us to at least expand our bridges and go outside and look at what they did this week with the signing of the guard, John Moffitt. He's a tackle who retired, has had some issues with the public intoxication. He also had an assault issue. And that's not typically a guy that Chip reaches out for, but it's a high-risk, high-reward type. I'm just curious to get your guys' take on why him?
Well, I there's a couple things here. For me, one of the things that I don't like, offensive line is not like Legos. You know, it's not something where you just plug and play and get away with it. You know, it's something where offensive line, guys got to play together for a while. They got to be together for a while. And, you know, you kind of put yourself into this tough situation where you need to go out and find almost a Kurt Warner of offensive line. You're looking at shopping bags, and this is what you've got. You know, you've got Moffitt, and, you know, it's a long shot. It's a long shot that this is going to pan out.
And Dave, to your point, I think he took the shot because Moffitt was a former third-round pick. He started 15 games for the Seattle Seahawks as they were an up-and-coming program. And Evan Mathis is no longer on the team, so to me, if he buys into the culture, you know, it's a win for Chip Kelly. If not, he gets cut during training camp.
And, you know, while we're talking about this, because this is a great transition, our guest from the Times of Trenton and NJ.com, Mr. Mark Eckel, is on the line, and I think he's got plenty of insight into this topic. Mark, welcome to the show.
How you doing?
Great, man. So, you know, we got a lot to talk about. As we mentioned in our opening here, it's not very often the Eagles look like they take a backseat to the other teams. And, well, we're fourth and go here. We never let a team like the Eagles take a backseat. So we wanted to bring you on.
It was kind of a week where, I mean, the hockey team made like 100 moves, and the basketball team got a pretty good player, and the baseball, if you want to call that a baseball team, you know, got a new manager and president. But, yeah. But the Eagles are still the top story in town.
Yeah, so and that's what we think, too. So we saw your article today on Chip Kelly and what you wrote about the ultra-private coach. We'd like a little of your insight, first off, of what kind of access have you had with Chip Kelly? What kind of conversations, discussions have you had? Does he box you out like typically he does the national media, or are you a little more engaged with him?
I mean, he is. I mean, I'm going to be right up front with you guys. I like Chip Kelly. I like him a lot. I like dealing, I mean, as a writer coach, I mean, I don't hang out with him, obviously, yeah. But I mean,
nobody
after
does.
14 years of getting the worst answers you can imagine from a head coach, I mean, all we ever got was, you know, we'll see. I have to put the guy in a better position to make, I mean, it was awful for 14 years. Chip Kelly, what Chip doesn't do, and I tried to put that in my story today, like, he, you know, he doesn't give one-on-one interviews. But he does, at his press conference, answer basically every question that's asked and gives pretty good answers. So I find him good to cover, for lack of a better word. I think he's a good coach to cover. I've covered Eagles for, like, what, 30 years now, so I've covered, you know, Buddy Ryan, Rich Kotite, Ray Rhodes, Andy Reid, and now Chip Kelly. And I think from a writer's standpoint, Chip's the best. I mean, he gives you what you need in good, like, Buddy was fun because he would say anything, but he wasn't good when you're looking for, like, he'd give you the good one-liner, but he didn't give you, like, a good solid quote about a guy. Chip gives you, you know, if you ask him about a certain player, if you're doing a story on Brent Celek and you ask him, you know, something about Brent Celek, he'll go on and give you a real, you know, he'll help your story for you.
And it seems
but he is very private. Like, I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. I was just transitioning there. It really seems like if you are smart enough or creative enough to talk to Chip and create your question in such a way, you will get an informed answer, which I seem to see you do quite a bit.
Absolutely. And that you're right on that. I mean, the better questions get better answers. And if you ask a stupid question, he's going to rip you, or he's going to give you a smart aleck answer. And I love that, because then it maybe gets some of these guys that, and I don't like to put down other
it's okay.
members of the media, but there are guys that just, like, I think they just want to hear their voice sometimes, and they ask inane questions, and he doesn't put up with that. And I'm hoping that, you know, he embarrasses them enough that they stop asking.
I love it.
Hey, Mark, this is Gilligan, and that is definitely a change of pace from what we had here with Andy Reid for so many years. I mean, it had to be painful to try to – you almost have to come up with your own story because Andy just gives you nothing over and over and over.
Absolutely nothing. Thank God we had Jim Johnson for what, most of those 11 out of 14 years or whatever it was, 10 out of 14, because Jim was very good. And, you know, probably if I look back, I probably wrote a lot more about the defense than I did about the offense back then. But
for good reason.
To get answers from Jim.
God bless Jim.
No, I mean, yeah, Chip's fine. Chip, I have no problem at all dealing with him. I really don't.
Now, Mark, this is Mark Drumheller. Why do some of the Eagles fans have such a hard time, do you think, buying in the Chip? Like, is it because he came from college, or is it the massive turnover to the roster? Like, you would think that his big balls Chip persona would resonate with Phillies fans.
He got rid of a lot of their favorites, and that's always tough on a fan. I'm not a fan. Mm-hmm. I'm a reporter, and I don't have much problem with most of what they've done this off. I mean. But, you know, if you have a LeSean McCoy jersey, a DeSean Jackson jersey, a Nick Foles jersey, and you wore those to the games every week, you know, you're a little upset that your guy isn't here anymore, whether he got traded or cut or whatever. But, you know, there's rash. I believe in it, and we'll find out. I mean, this could blow up, and maybe some of the people were right that he messed up. But we'll find out. All I know is the team that he broke up hasn't won a playoff game since 2008 and missed the playoffs three of the last four years. So he's not breaking up the steel curtain. He's not breaking up Lombardi's Packers. He's breaking up a team that underachieved for the most part, that didn't accomplish anything. So, I mean, I think he saw that. I think he saw we have some good individual talent here, but it's not a team. We're not winning. This group that we have, Nick Foles, LeSean McCoy, DeSean Jackson, Jeremy Maclin, for that matter, we're not winning. These guys aren't winning anything. We're not going to win with this group. So let's do it. Let's see if this new group, if Sam Bradford, DeMarco Murray, Nelson Aguilar, Jordan Matthews, I'm just talking offense now, you know, let's see if we can win with this group because we weren't going to win with that other group.
And
that's
I think the games against Green Bay and Seattle kind of really put that on the map and made him realize that he's not there yet with the class of the NFC.
Mark.
No, and he said that.
And Mark.
We actually talked to him about that. And, you know, because I actually asked him, we had him, I don't know when it was, a couple weeks ago, I guess, just at the end of minicamp. And, you know, I said to him, you know, what was the plan at the end of the season? Did you realize you needed to, you know, when did it all? And he said, we knew we weren't close. And we learned that, you know, this team as it was assembled wasn't close.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. You know, what do you think? Hey, Mark, what do you think the logic is behind the shuffle here in the 11th hour with the offensive line? I mean, what's the game plan there? I mean.
What do you mean with bringing in Moffitt?
Right.
Well, he was available. He decided to come back. It's a very low risk. They gave him they gave him a 1-year minimum deal with no upfront money. So you bring him in. I mean, this guy was a pretty good. I mean, I always believe in pedigree to some extent, and by that I mean he was a third round pick out of Wisconsin.
True.
Pretty good school, Big Ten. Big Ten is known for producing good offensive linemen. I mean, I can go through the league and tell you that there's probably a half a dozen or more good starting offensive linemen out of Wisconsin. I mean, the kid from Dallas, the center from Dallas is a Wisconsin guy. There's Wisconsin linemen all over. So anyway, but that's what I mean by pedigree. Now, he was a third-round pick. He's, as a rookie, he wins a starting job in Seattle. Then he hurts his knee. And that's my biggest concern of if he's any good or not. I mean,
right.
I had a scout tell me that before the knee injury, yeah, he wasn't a bad player. He was pretty good. But after he hurt the knee, he lost a lot of lateral movement, didn't change his direction as well. He was kind of, you know, but again, it's been a while now. So, and he hasn't played in a year and a half. You know, if the knee's good, now he's gotten into some problems. That's well documented. He retired. He was traded from Seattle to Denver. In the middle of Denver's Super Bowl run, he decides he doesn't want to play anymore. He retired.
Right, he only played a couple of games in Denver.
Why he retired. Then he also had some problems, and that might have been his wonderful speech about why he retired. And I'm just speculating here, you know, may have masked the fact that he was battling drug and alcohol problems. It hit a low one night in a club in Chicago where he was arrested. You know, he checked himself into a rehab on his own, you know, cleaned up. So I look at this as, you know, giving a guy a second chance. I think I heard when I was on hold, I heard, well, what do you guys say? There's no loss here. I mean, if he comes in and he's and the knee still isn't that good, or he's just not that good, he's one of the. I mean, they have 90 guys on the roster, so what, 37 of them aren't going to make it. Did I do my math right? 53. Yeah. 37 of them aren't going to make it.
Right.
If he's one of the ones that doesn't make it, he's one of the ones that doesn't make it. But if he does make it, and he turns out to be a, you know, they're starting right guard, it's a hell of a story.
Yeah, this is Harold Johnson III. I just wanted to jump in. Speaking of the offensive line and who they'll be protecting this year, I want you to be Mark Eckel head coach. Who would you have rather had to start the season, Sam Bradford or Nick Foles? I want to put you on the record. Who would you have rather had underneath center to start the season?
Is Sam Bradford healthy? Can I ask that?
Well, considering his health history, but coming back relatively healthy, yes. Of course, we can assume that.
Oh, Sam Bradford, without a doubt.
Okay. Now, say Bradford only plays relatively well this year and Chip wants to dip back into the quarterback market. Do you think the Eagles would chase Russell Wilson next year? Also, and I know this is a complete shot in the dark, Marcus Mariota not signed yet with the Tennessee Titans.
Yes, he hasn't signed that. Isn't that hilarious? I mean, of all the guys to be the last one to sign, it has to be Marcus Mariota, right?
I know he has till July 29th to report, incredible. But wow. So do you think the Eagles would go after Wilson or maybe even make a trade for Mariota?
I don't think. My gut feeling is, Russ, this is all talk right now. It's all leverage. It's all, you know, using the media to get your point across. Seattle's not letting Russell Wilson go. It's just not going to happen. I mean, if they have to use the franchise tag on him, if it comes to that, which I don't think it will, I mean, if he does become available, I think the Eagles and a dozen other teams are all going to be in line for him. I mean, he's proven to be a pretty darn good quarterback. He's been to the Super Bowl two straight years. He's, you know, he has the attributes that you think a Chip Kelly offense would really maximize. So yeah, I mean, but I think like I said, if he does become available, the Eagles will. Yes, the Eagles would have to. They wouldn't be doing themselves justice if they didn't at least look into it. But I don't think that's going to happen. I don't know. I mean, Bradford's. That's a very interesting story this year because he is on the final year of his deal. If he plays, let's play both sides here. If he plays really well, and the Eagles win a division, go to the playoffs, win a playoff game or two, you have to kind of keep him, don't you? I mean,
that's big money, though. Big money. If he wins a playoff game or two, it's big contract. You're talking max deal, maybe.
Other than there's no, they don't have that NFL.
Well, true. Now
that he's making 13. This 12.9 this year. But here's the thing: if you're Sam Bradford and you do put up these numbers, you don't really want to go anywhere else, do you? I mean, if this offense fit you perfectly and you did well in it, I mean, again, you're going to pay him big, but you're going to pay Russell Wilson even bigger, and you're going to – good quarterbacks make big money these days. Average quarterbacks make big money these days. I mean, I'm not a big Andy Dalton fan, but he's getting paid a lot of money in Cincinnati.
Oh, he's terrible.
I'm not a big Ryan Tannehill fan, to be honest with you. I mean, Ryan Tannehill's never made the playoffs, has he?
No, not yet.
And he just got a ton of money. So – If to play the other side, if Bradford either A, can't stay healthy, or B, just isn't that good, then you got to move on. And then he probably, I would think if he gets hurt again, he may just retire and say, listen, you know, Sam Bradford's grandchildren can live.
He was thinking about retiring already, wasn't he?
That he's already made. Right. I mean, so if that happens, I think he just walks away from the game, and I don't want to put thoughts in Sam Bradford's mind, but like you said, that has already crossed his mind. And another injury. I mean, I think the guy wants to be able to walk when he's, you know, 35. So, but the other, like I said, the other worry is he stays healthy and he just doesn't fit this. He doesn't fit well in the offense. Then you got problem. Then you have to move on. And I don't know what they do. I mean, I guess if he's bad, the team's going to be bad, and they'll have a decent pick next year. And I guess they go with another quarterback. But I don't think
nobody
the Eagles
want
to hear that right
no,
now.
No, nobody wants that.
I think what the Eagles want to hear is what we said first, is that Bradford stays healthy. He fits well. I will say this. What they like about him and what made him attractive to Chip Kelly, and people say, well, he's not mobile. And I think we've learned now that despite what we thought coming in about Chip Kelly's offense, mobility, it's nice to have it. Granted, I mean, he would love to have a Mariota or a Wilson, but anybody would. What's more important in Chip Kelly's offense than mobility is quick decision-making and getting rid of the ball, getting the ball out quickly. And that's what Nick Foles didn't do. And that's why they soured on Nick Foles and felt that he wasn't the answer going forward. They didn't like the fact that Nick sometimes just would hold the ball too long and, not get it out there quicker. Because everything Chip Kelly does is up-tempo and based on moving. And they want an offense that's going to click, bang, bang, bang downfield. And Bradford, and again, it's been a long time to watch him play, but at his best, when he was at Oklahoma and then his rookie year with the Rams when he won the Rookie of the Year award, that's what he did. He is a guy that gets the ball out. He has a quick release. He gets rid of it quickly. He makes quick decisions.
And he's accurate.
So that's in his favor. And he is accurate, yes.
So,
he can be accurate.
Yeah, I mean, his completion percentage is up and down, but knowing his college days, and this offense kind of fits that. But we're coming to the end of the show here, Mark, but we wanted to talk to you real fast before we got you out of here. Do you have any upcoming projects on the horizon here?
Yes, we do. Coming out, it'll be out, and hopefully right in time of training. Training camp opens August 2nd, and I have a book. Actually, Ruben Frank, who works for Comcast, and myself, we have a book coming out, The Eagles Playbook. It's a remake of a book we did about 5-6 years ago. It's been updated. They really did a great job. It's a soft cover now. It's the Eagles Playbook, Inside the Huddle with the Greatest Plays in Eagles History. And what we did, there's 52 plays now in the book, because we did add some. And it's not just a recap of the play, but we actually interviewed all the principles in the play. Like, for instance, the miracle of Meadowlands. I'll just use that one as an example. We didn't just go back and rewrite what happened that day. We talked to Herm Edwards again about it. We talked to guys, other people that were at the, other players that were involved in the game, and got, like, the inside story. Like, just for that one, an example of that one, Leonard Toews, who owned the Eagles at the time, was in the hospital during that game and thought the game was over. Thought they had lost, and he saw it, and then the whole thing was saw in the game, and so we got behind the story. We didn't just tell you about the play, but there's a lot of behind the scenes stuff. It's not to brag, but it did come out pretty well, and it looks great. We've seen the copies of it. Great pictures, great diagrams. It'll be available. Hopefully, they're telling us that it should be in bookstores and on Amazon and all that kind of stuff. August 1st. Which is great timing with camp opening August 2nd.
We'll have to keep an eye out for that. And let me ask you one more before you go. One play that we were most of us were in the stands for. Did you guys happen to cover the famous 4th and 26 catch by Fab Fry Freddie Mitchell?
Yes, absolutely. And there's great quotes. I won't give you all of them because I might just buy the book. But there's great quotes from Freddie Mitchell.
Doesn't he always have great quotes?
I'll just give you one.
Yeah.
Freddie being Freddie. Freddie as he was, and he was, God, I wish he was a better player because he was such a great quote. Freddie's quote was, "Nobody remembers that Donovan threw the ball. Everybody remembers that I caught it." Which isn't really true, but Freddie said it, so it was great.
He's a quote machine. But, Mark, we really appreciate you coming on, man, tonight.
Anytime, guys.
Yeah, we appreciate the insight. We're real excited to check out that book when it comes out because, like you, we're impartial to the team, but we're also fans from a distance. So we know the history, and we can't wait to read that stuff.
Well, it goes way back. I mean, you guys sound, I don't know, I think you guys are younger than I am anyway, but most people are now. But
we're not too far away, put it that way. We're not too far off.
It goes back. We went back to the Van Buren, some of his, Chuck Bednarik, we were lucky enough to talk to both of them before they passed away. We go back. It goes back to the 48 and 49 title games. Like I said, the 1960 team is well represented with stories about Bednarik and Tommy McDonald, Norm Van Brocklin. So it touches the whole, basically the history of the team from, people. I don't know if you guys get bothered by this, but I do. When you run into a Cowboy fan or whatever, and they say how the Eagles, well, they never won a title. Well, yeah, they did.
But they did.
Just because they didn't call it a Super Bowl. No one says that the New York Yankees didn't win those titles back when, they won them in Babe Ruth's World Series counts, so why don't, Steve Van Buren's NFL titles count, right?
Well, you know what I like to tell those guys? I like to tell them we're the only team to beat Vince Lombardi. His only playoff loss was to the Philadelphia Eagles in that 1960 championship.
First playoff game he lost. And
he never lost again. That's correct. All right, Mark, thanks again, man. We'll be in touch.
Take care.
And thanks a lot.
No problem. Take care.
All right, that's a lot of good insight there from one of the best Eagles columnists we have around in this area.
Can't wait to get that book.
To take in.
Like Gilligan said, we lived that 4th and 26 play. I was on my way out of the tunnel. I was. I'll admit, but I had one eye on the field and one eye on parking lot.
I couldn't walk too well that night, so I stayed in my seat. But
and I remember because Drums was standing next to me in the stands, and I looked over at him, and he looked at me. And I'm like, it's going to take a miracle. There's no way.
Yeah, bring on the miracle.
This is done. And it happened. It was unbelievable.
And then what happened in overtime? Never mind. I don't want to talk about it. Because my boy Favre threw a pick, and man.
It was more like a punt.
Yeah, he definitely threw up that heel in ball. I didn't know what he was doing.
It was just good coverage. So, hey, we got a few minutes left before we wrap it up here. So I'm going to give you a couple of rapid-fire shots. I know I'd love to react with Mark, but we'll do that on Twitter later, fellas. And we have some national topics that are hot right now, so I'd like to just throw a few at you guys. First off, Harold, women's soccer, what a game last night. What'd you think?
South Jersey's own Carly Lloyd scored the first goal, the game-winning goal on PKs, and then set up the goal to go up 2-0. And Sunday they take on the winner of the Japan-England game.
Yeah, tonight that game's ongoing right
now.
Yeah,
so it's going to be great. Every 4 years they infuse the country with this patriotism. It was great watching that last night.
Our local hockey expert here, Mark, Phil Kessel, going to the hated Penguins. What'd you think about that move today? I mean, it looked like a good move by the Penguins, but it's a lot of money.
You knew the Penguins were going to go after a winger and get one. I mean, they were just determined. Kessel's obviously a good fit there. Wouldn't have been too good of a fit for the Flyers.
No.
He's a guy, he's more of a disher, sets up players. Flyers really need someone on the wing that can score and put the puck in the net. So I was kind of glad to see him go elsewhere. When the Flyers opened up some space, I was a little concerned they were going to waste it on Kessel. So
yeah, so I'm fine with him going there.
Absolutely.
The Flyers still have them in their pocket. So, and Gilligan, we got one talk because you're a guy that likes to shuffle the cards, throw the chips on the table. Phil Mickelson. Reportedly throwing out $3 million in illegal gambling. Do you even care?
3.27, I think.
Oh, man.
I'll take the 2.7.
What's he betting on, man?
Well, he's betting on poker.
Yeah.
He should be betting on poker instead of what is he betting on? What's Mickelson out there losing money on?
I think he's got a lot of extracurricular activities, let's put it that
way. Yeah, maybe he's got Pete Rose's number, man.
If he's smart, he'll be betting on Conor McGregor, July 11th, UFC 189. Jose Aldo has backed out.
Now, why did he back out? They're saying he wouldn't take a drug test.
Bruised ribs. Yeah. Bruised ribs. There was some controversy over the drug test, the urine sample a couple weeks back, but bruised ribs. He says that there's cartilage broken or whatnot, but he bailed out.
Scared.
Chad Money Mendez steps in, but I like McGregor's reach in that one. I'm putting the house on McGregor.
If he's smart, he's putting a little bit of money on the Chicago Cubs to sneak into the playoffs this year.
I heard rumors now that they may be the top trade destination for Cole Hamels.
I think it's a perfect fit there, actually. They've got a lot of their rotation looks pretty good now. Hendricks is pitching well. Hamill is pitching well. Arrieta is pitching well. Lester's pitching well. They got a void at the back end. You plug Hamill's in there. They're just a couple games out right now.
But
that's your sleeper money. Mickelson, if you're listening, drop a Nicholson on the Cubbies.
On Bartman. Put it on Bartman.
I
see how that
you.
Works out.
And don't get excited, Phillies fans. That doesn't mean Chris Bryant, Jose Soler, or even
Cubs have a good farm system.
Yeah,
the Phillies
Addison
can get
Russell,
something of value.
Yeah, they're not going to see any major league players coming back to them, but they could sit there and get one of their two or three of their top prospects
in
the farm.
And that's a nice model franchise for us to look at.
And
if
it's
you look
Jorge
back, 2012 losses, 2013 100 losses, 2014 90 losses. I might be off by a year there. But and now they're on the brink of making playoffs.
Hey, you remember when we talked 2-3 weeks ago?
Yeah.
Bud Black?
Buddy Black, baby.
Is he still in play?
No.
Nobody's talking about him.
I'll tell you what, a guy that I would like to keep an eye on is Joe McEwen, Pennsylvania native. He's the third base coach at the White Sox, but he was brought up in that Minnesota Twins era. He's a young guy. He could bring some
right from the McPhail.
I agree with Mark, a younger guy I'd like to see the Phillies bring in.
Yeah, I mean, that's possible. There aren't many in the system right now, so it looks like they're going to have to reach outside the system to fill that role.
But and you guys probably touched on this at the top of the show, but it sounds like the replacement is not going to be named until the end of the season.
Yeah, McCann did sign on for the rest
of
the season.
For the rest of the season.
Yeah, man, get him a case of Pepto. So while we have that on our mind, we're moving on. We're closing out the show tonight. What a show. Thanks so much to our Philadelphia Inquirer,
next
Flyers
week.
Beat writer, Sam Carcitti, for calling in. Also, thanks to NJ.com.
Mark Eckel.
He was a great
awesome
guest tonight.
And make sure you get that book when it comes out.
Oh, I can't wait. And then transitioning next week, we're going to broaden out our horizon. We're going to go a little further, and we're going to reach our wings. We're going to talk to Frank Saravelli, formerly a Flyers beat writer, but now with TSN Canada. And we're going to look at the broad picture of hockey, what it looks like, which teams made the best moves in the offseason, how the coaching situation shuffled. It's going to be a great show. You can't miss it.
And before we go, I'd like to send a special shout out to the hospital, University of Pennsylvania. They're doing some great work down there. They totally turned my dad around today, and this morning he was doing really bad, and right now he's doing great.
That's awesome news.
Yeah, good pop,
good stuff.
So thanks for the good work you guys are putting in over there across the river.
Fourth and go.
We're fourth and go. We're here every week, 1 hour, Wednesdays, 8 to 9 p.m. We're bringing sports from all different angles, ones you don't hear during the day on any other station. That's what we're here for. We're fourth and go. Listen to us. Look us up. Get a hold of us. We'll see you next week.